Okay. I call the October 7th, 2013 meeting of the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Agenda, or roll call, please.
Pelzer? Vakey?
Present.
Gast? Miller? Donaldson? Present. Feathers? Absent.
Thank you. We have in front of us an agenda for the evening. Any additions, corrections, or is there a motion to accept the agenda as written?
So moved.
Okay. Moved by Gast, second by Miller. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? Okay, we'll stick with the agenda we have for the night. We all got a copy of the minutes from our last meeting that we had.
Move approval
by Gast, second by Miller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Minutes of our last meeting are approved. And with that, we'll move into a section called public comment, and that is public comment for anything that is not on tonight's agenda. So if there's anything you'd like to bring forward to the commission, this is a good time to do it. And all night long, it looks like we have a lot of people here. Anytime you've got something to say, we'll ask you to step to the microphone, give your name and your address, and then always speak into the microphone once you're recorded. So, anything for public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to old business, which we have none, and so then we'll move into new business. And our first item on new business is a rezoning. It's REZ03-13, and Charlie, you're going to talk us through that?
Such.
Okay.
This is the already official zoning map amendment request. The property location that we are looking at here, it's on County Line Road, also known as North 500th Avenue, or County Road R38. It's between 190th Street, which is actually in Boone County, and south of 5964 North 500th Avenue. The size of the amendment area is approximately 4 acres. It's about 4.07 gross, 3.65 net. Current zoning in place in the property is A1 agriculture. It's classified as agricultural as it is currently in row crop production. And looking at the county development plan, it does designate the property as an agricultural conservation area. Map here, we'll show you the general area that we're looking at. As you can see, the county boundary right here, this area over here, Boone County, this area over here, Story County. The area, the parcel that we're looking at is actually outlined in green here. However, the area that's being rezoned is from about this point to the west here. Just a few pictures we have looking onto the property. This is looking towards the northeast. You can see some of the buildings on this area right here. If I go back real quick, there's actually a farmstead located on that in this area right there on that corner. So those are the buildings that you're seeing in some of those pictures here. This here looking more to the southeast onto the area. This looking here again at that farmstead is kind of right where the farmstead southern boundary meets the proposed area. And then this looking from about that same location to the south, and you can see again the hard surface county road traveling there. The applicant does propose to rezone this area of their property in an effort to sell about 4 acres for a small seed corn company. As we have mentioned, it is along a hard surface county road. There is Xenia Rural Water located. It's actually on the west side of the county line road. This is in Midland Power's electrical service territory and is also part of the West Story Fire District out of Gilbert. When we look at official zoning map amendments, there are 5 standards of approval that need to be satisfied. They're listed on the screen here above. For the first one is the rezoning shall conform to the development plan. Second, that the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent of the proposed district. Third, that the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. Fourth, the proposed rezoning shall protect environmental resources. And the fifth is in areas where the petition to rezone requests a change from the A1 or A2 to another district, land scoring 267 or above for the total LISA as determined by the land evaluation and site assessment, and it should say shall not be approved at the end of there. So first, looking at the county development plan, These principles here were listed in your staff report. There's three principles that go along with the agriculture conservation area, four principles, and along with that, actually three objectives when looking at the agricultural conservation area. First, to say conserving agricultural land and practices is a fundamental and enduring principle in Story County. Principle two, farm and agricultural operations are vital to the economy of the region. The third principle, in cooperation with communities, areas are reserved for future growth of incorporated communities within the 2 mile shared planning areas of those communities, balancing the need for growth with conservation of areas for continued agricultural uses. And fourth, areas for development are designated to limit conflicts between agricultural uses and rural residents and other land uses. Then the three objectives, first, Story County will continue to foster land use policies and regulations which conserve the productivity and preservation and preserve the availability of high ag value land. Objective two, the planning process will promote the continued health of agriculture through voluntary incentive-based programs and strategies. And the third objective, factors will be identified and used in determining the relative priority given to conservation of a particular piece of ground for continued ag use. Looking at the statement of intent for the A2 Agribusiness District, which is the district that's being proposed, that states that the A2 District is intended and designed to provide for those activities strongly interrelated with agricultural uses and must therefore be located in agricultural areas. It may be necessary to locate such land uses on land scoring 267 to 300 points based on the LISA system, although this shall be avoided wherever possible. It is also intended that, to the degree possible, all A2 districts shall be entirely surrounded by the A1 district. Quick looking at some of the surrounding areas here. The proposed amendment is located in what we would consider an agricultural area. The area is completely surrounded by agricultural crop production ground, except for that 2.64-acre farmstead on the northwest corner of the site. Looking at the area within 1/2 mile of this proposed rezoning, we estimate about 86.6% of it's in agriculture and about 13.4% being used for residential. Then looking at the parcel breakdown, there's 55 total parcels located within 1/2 mile. 56% of those are used for agriculture and about 44% are used for residential. This area is located in the Squaw Creek watershed. The proposed rezoning area does not include any lands in floodplain. It does not include any areas designated in the natural resource area on the county development plan. And it does not include any public drainage tiles or is not any public drainage district. Staff did note that this amendment area scored a 197 for the site assessment on the LISA score and a 289 for the total LISA score. Going back to that LISA score requirement, it does state that when rezoning from an A1 or an A2 to another district, since we're going from A1 to A2 here, that particular standard of approval does not apply to the request. However, I do want to take you back to the statement of intent for that A2, where it does state that it may be necessary to locate such uses on land scoring 267 or 300 points based on the LISA system, although this shall be avoided where possible. We did place a development notification sign on the property on September 13th of this year. Notification letters were mailed last week on October 2nd, and legal notices were published on October 3rd. You're familiar with the condition of approval language on here. With this particular request, staff at this time is not suggesting or recommending any conditions of approval be placed on this rezoning. So with that, your four alternatives are listed on the screen above me, and if there's any questions of the commission, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Commissioners, do we have questions of Mr. Dissel?
Are these public input for this or for?
No. This will be, just so you all kind of know the format here, we'll have a staff report, and commissioners then get to ask questions of staff, and then at that time we'll ask the applicant to to come forward and present his case or her case, and then questions by the commissioners again of the applicant, and then there'll be room for public comment and public questions in there, which we'd like to have you come to the microphone at that time, and then we'll vote. So, okay. Any questions for Charla? Okay, not yet. Do we have the applicant here? Step forward, give your name and address, and tell us a little bit about what's going on here.
I'm Valerie Diana, and I'm from Gilbert, Iowa. And maybe one of us, 37 acres in that.
Just a second here. So we have a microphone here. Okay, can you start all over again, please?
My name is Valeredi Anantram, and I'm from Gilbert, Iowa. And we were, Mark Gannon, we know Mark Gannon for a long time now, and he was responsible for us to get this land, and we are planning to sell a part of our land to finance my... son's education, and so... Mark, I told Mark, and he got me a prospective buyer that is Tim Groper, I think Advent was the company name, and they were interested in building a small seed company there, and that's how the whole process started, and we applied for this morning on the A1 day. Any questions?
So, Mr. Valeredi?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you live at the property closest to this site, or is that someone else?
That's someone else. We live in the town of Gilbert. We live in the city. But this is about 3 miles away from my house.
And the property behind this 4 acres, you spoke that you might lease that to this Grow More.
Right, correct.
And would that be on an annual basis or a long-term lease? Or
I think it's a five-year lease. So it's for 5 years.
I have a question on this, too. Wow, this is loud. Can you describe the type of operation that's going in there? I've heard a small seed corn business. Is it buildings, processing? What's going on in there?
That's Merlin representing the prospective buyer to talk about it.
Okay.
Good evening. Yeah, my name is Merlin Bowers. I live in Gilbert, Iowa as well. I'm the operations and financial manager for AgVenture Grow More, and we will be distributing seed corn, seed beans from that location. We'll also be renting some of the property and have some demonstrations, some field demonstrations on some of the acreage next door. I would estimate, to start with, there'll be very little traffic in and out of there. 10 to 20 semis a year for the most part for the near future. Perhaps, and most of that would be, from February through planting season or, May or June. Anything else you might like?
For me, I guess you're intending on putting up buildings there, storage sheds on for the seed corn. And
yeah, we're looking at putting up about a 10,000, 12,000 square foot building with an office on the side of it. But there'll only be like two full time employees right now, and there'll be two to four part time employees for a couple months of the year when we're busy. So the traffic will be very minimal.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Bowers. Okay, with that, we'll move into public. Anybody from the public would like to address this situation here? Okay, I think we waited sufficiently long enough, so... with that, we'll close the public comment there. Commissioners, anybody care to make a motion or just open discussion at the moment?
Oh, I'll make a motion so that we have something to discuss. I move that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommend approval of the official rezoning map amendment as put forth in case REZ0313 to the Story County Board of Supervisors.
That'd be alternative number one, I take it? Okay. Is there a second on that?
I'll second.
Okay. So moved by Gaff, seconded by Couser. Okay. Sure being a distraction today. Okay. We've had a motion and a second. Is there discussion on this? Okay. Hearing no discussion, roll call.
Aye. Couser?
Aye.
Gaff?
Yes.
Biggie?
Yes.
Donaldson?
The motion carries. Thank you for being here with us. When would this go to the Board of Supervisors?
Real quick, and the reason we didn't have those dates on there is because we're going through a new process with the Board of Supervisors now with any public hearings where we actually have to set the public hearings by resolution. So we'll get that all squared away here within the next couple of days, and then we'll be in touch with the applicant to let them know.
So the applicant will get a copy of the resolution and a date?
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get a copy of the resolution, but we'll give them a copy or just a letter telling them what date it's going to go on. We'll be in contact with you regarding that. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gass. And with that, we'll move on to the second item on the agenda here, and that is REZ03-13 packet. Is that you again?
Nope, next one down.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. CUP03-13. Thank you.
Should be 0613. We're on the right one.
Excuse me. Okay, here we are. CUP06-13, the Swanson Conditional Use Permit.
As you had mentioned, this is the Swanson Conditional Use Permit, Conditional Use Permit request for a commercial wind energy conversion system, more commonly referred to as a wind farm or wind turbine in this case. Property owner is Fred Weavy. General property location, it's at the northwest corner of the intersection of 650th Avenue, which is County Road S27 and 220th Street. The area stretches 1/2 mile west of that intersection and 1/4 mile north. The size of the area that we're looking at is approximately 120 total acres. Zoning in place on the property is A1 agriculture. The property is in an agricultural use as it is used for agricultural row crop production. The county development plan does designate this property as cooperative planning area tier 3. That is because it is within 2 miles of the city of Nevada. However, in the staff report, we did mention that the city of Nevada does not plan for land use this far outside of their corporate boundaries. Got a surrounding property owner notification map here that was mailed out. You can see the area, conditional use permit area in yellow there, kind of the L-shaped piece right there. The intersection of 220th Street and 650th is right there. This particular map here kind of shows that same area, but does include where the proposed turbine at this point is located, and that is in this area. A few pictures here. This is looking towards what would be the southwest onto the area where the turbine will be located. This looking about the same location, but down the road on S27 to the south. This looking back to the north from the intersection of 650th S27 and 220th Street there. This looking down 220th Street, which you can see is a gravel road. And then this one looking from the southwest corner of the area back over through the northeast. The applicant does propose to put a single turbine on the property, which will be approximately 405 feet in height. The CWEX unit and associated maintenance road, according to the applicant, will require less than 3/4 of an acre. The CWEX will produce enough clean energy to equal the electricity consumption of 530 average homes for a period of 1 year, according to the applicant, and will generate electricity for sale to a utility that will use the power to supply electricity to homes and businesses in the immediate area. The LLC that this is under will own and operate the CWEX and has executed an easement with the landowners. This easement does govern the placement of the CWEX on the landowner's property. As we did mention, or as Will mentioned, the property is located in the Nevada Fire District. It's located within the Indian Creek watershed, and it is also partially within two public drainage districts, that being Nevada 17 and Richland 20. Going over the standards of approval for a conditional use permit, the areas that we look at are conformance to compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, and environmental protection. If the board does conclude that all those development criteria will be met by the proposed development, it shall approve the application and plans unless it concludes, based on the information submitted, that there is a strong probability of development will, and then it goes into not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare, impair an adequate supply of light and air to surrounding property, unduly increase congestion in the roads or hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers, diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding property, and to not be in accord with the intent, purpose, and spirit of this ordinance or the Story County Development Plan. To get a better idea if those particular criteria are met, as the board may be aware, commercial wind energy conversion systems are subject to supplemental standards. Those supplemental standards are included on the screen here above. I'll go through and outline just a few of those that were submitted. First of all, the turbine will be a tubular monopole type tower that will be painted in non-reflective color with a matte finish. The applicant does not propose to use any signage on this particular wind turbine. Lighting will be used near the base of the turbine and around the control hut, as well as required by the Federal Aviation Administration. There will be a feeder line between the CWEX and a utility substation on 19th Street in Nevada that will all be buried in the public right away. There will be one service road approximately 15 feet wide that will be installed with only one access point, and that's off of 650th Avenue, which is County Road S27 and is a hard surface road. The CWEX is designed to operate and be managed remotely, so it is not anticipated to increase traffic really much at all, and the applicant does predict 5 trips per month to the site. The base of the turbine is a circle at approximately 16 feet in diameter, and an area of approximately 60 by 60 will be maintained as a gravel and grass lot for the parking of one or two maintenance vehicles when needed. The total height of the turbine, again, will be 405 feet with a ground clearance that's from the ground to the lowest point of any of the blades of 119 feet. Using this height, it would require a setback of 445.5 feet from both public right-of-way and communication and electrical lines. This particular location that's being proposed, the turbine is set back 860 feet from the west right-of-way line of 650th Avenue and 915 feet from the north right-of-way line of 220th Street. Looking at the closest single-family dwelling, it is approximately 1,175 feet away from the proposed turbine, and the minimum for that is 1,000 feet. The application does show a communication tower located within 2 miles to the east of this site. Staff did note that there is also a cell tower inside the city of Nevada that is within 2 miles of this site, located in Nevada's Harrington Park. According to the applicant, there was an acoustical analysis prepared by the wind Wind Utility Consulting, Tom Wind, for CUP 0507, which was approved back in 2007. And that did indicate a noise level of 35 decibels at the nearest occupied home. That particular measurement is 20 decibels or 36% below the county mandated level. And the applicant has stated that a study will be completed prior to the last meeting with Story County officials in the CUP process, which would be more unique to this particular request. The project's engineers have included a decommissioning budget in the overall project financial plan. Applicant does claim that a pre-construction survey in coordination with the impacted local road authority will be conducted by the applicant to determine the pre-construction conditions of the roads that will be used during the construction of this CUX. There was a development notification sign placed on the property on September 16th, and again, notification letters were mailed out on October 2nd and legal notifications regarding this meeting published on October 3rd. Staff is, with this conditional use permit, recommending six conditions of approval. First, that the acoustical analysis shall be completed prior to the Story County Board of Adjustment hearing. Second condition, that all vehicular parking associated with the construction, operation, or maintenance of the CUX shall take place on site and shall not at any time take place in the public right of way. That the applicant shall enter into an agreement with the county for purposes of decommissioning an escrow account. And a copy of the signed agreement shall be submitted to the Planning and Development Department along with or prior to the application for any zoning permit. The applicant shall conduct a pre-construction survey in coordination with the impacted local road authorities to determine the pre-construction condition of the roads that will be used during the construction. Story County Road Authority shall be notified 24 hours prior to construction materials being transported across those respective jurisdiction roads to the CLEX site and shall give approval to all the haul routes. And lastly, an engineer's certification shall be submitted with the application for any zoning permit. With that one, your four conditions are listed on the screen above, and if there's any questions regarding this application, I would be happy to answer them at this time.
Yes, Nancy.
Go back to the previous page, number 3.
The condition you're talking?
That's correct. The escrow account. The purpose of that is?
The escrow account would be for decommissioning at any time. I think Arden states that if they are abandoned for a year or more at that point,
okay,
they need to be decommissioned. If for whatever reason they abandoned it, it has to do with them going bankrupt or something of that. That gives us the money, the escrow account would give us the money to go in and remove the turbine.
Okay. I figured that, but I wanted to clarify that one.
Other questions for Mr. Dissel? Yes?
You said that we needed a signed copy of that decomposition. Do we have that?
Not at this time, no, but in past applications with this particular LLC, we've gotten them before, and they work with our county attorney's office to make sure that they're up to what they need to be, I guess. So.
We don't necessarily need that at this meeting.
That's up to the Planning and Zoning Commission. If you'd like to see it before giving approval, that's definitely up to you. But in the past, we've seen them as part of the zoning permit when we actually issue the permit for the turbines. So.
It also will need to go to the Board of Supervisors.
No, this goes to the Board of Adjustment. Does not go to the Board of Supervisors.
Not go to the Supervisors,
nope.
Even under the consent agenda?
Nope. Okay. Well, the zoning permit, when the conditional use permit won't, but once the conditional use permit's approved, then they apply for the zoning permit, and the zoning permit would go to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
And that's just to approve the site plan.
Other questions of Charlie? Okay, thank you very much. With that, do we have the applicant here? Yes, would you like to come forward and give your name and address? And
good evening. My name is Mark Steffen, and I live at 2316 Aspen Road in Ames, Iowa, and I work with the Dale Swanson family on their wind project. I want to thank the board for taking time to review these rather long, laborious applications. We have previously installed six units. Four of them are in Story County. So we first appeared here in, back in 2007 when we started doing this. And it's been a good business and been successful. So all of the owners reside and live locally right here in the county. Having reviewed, you know, the recommendations and the requirements, I have no problem with those at all. They seem fair and reasonable to me, and I would welcome any questions that you might have.
Okay, Nancy?
The closest landowners, are they aware that this is in that this is happening?
Well, aside from the notifications received, of course, one of the closest landowners is one of the individuals we have the easement with, number one. And then I believe Doc Hewen is here, and Mr. Swanson has been in discussions with him. I think there might be one landowner who we haven't met personally with on this, but of course, they've been notified by the county.
Thank you.
Did you have any comments from the outside?
Just general questions that have come in about the application. And I know there was one individual who expressed some concern just about wind turbines in general and informed us that they'd be submitting some written comments, and I don't think we ever received those.
Okay. You mentioned that you have six locations currently.
We have four locations, six wind turbines. There's two locations.
And where are they?
They are.
Just to remind all of us.
Sure. So one is in Lincoln Township, Section 5. Two are in Warren, Section 29, Warren Township, Section 29. And one is in Indian Creek, Section 24.
Okay.
One that probably sticks out the most, the one in Indian Creek, is just to the, would be east of Maxwell, northeast of Maxwell down there. That one's kind of standalone. The other four, or the other three that you mentioned, kind of all fall within the big wind farm up there by Zerian.
Okay.
Correct. And then the other two are in Hamilton County.
Thank you, Mr. Stephan.
Appreciate it.
At this point, we would take comments from the public.
My name is Ron Hewen. I am the resident who would be just north of this place. I support wind turbines. I have seven of them on my property north of Colville, so I'd be kind of hypocritical to be against them. My only question with this is, there is a designated, it's a wetland right near where I see this turbine being put. And I don't know what the criteria are for how far away from a wetland they have to be. You may just want to place it in a slightly different spot. The wetland is just in the crux of that L.
Mm-hmm.
I know things like this were discussed in Florida Power and Light, but they're far enough. I would hate to see him put it there and find out it should be 200 feet further away. But overall, Dale's been a good neighbor, and he'll continue to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Hume. Do you know of any regulations along those lines?
Yeah, we don't have any setbacks necessarily from wetlands. You know, we've had issues when we had the larger one come in and a few that were being located in the floodplain. With a few crossings of electrical lines and whatnot in the floodplain. But in this one in particular, we don't have anything that states that they need to be set back a certain distance from the wetland. The one thing I think that would come into play here is that engineer's certification. I believe that engineer's certification also will certify the foundation that's put in place on there based off the soils around the property. So that would give us a good idea of, you know, the stability of that wind turbine foundation based off that engineer's certification.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else in the public? Okay, seeing none, any further questions from the commission of either Mr. Dissel or Mr. Steffen? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion of some sort.
For the purpose of discussion, I'd like to move alternative two, which is a conditional approval with the six conditions that we have shown on the slide.
Okay, motion by Gass, is there a second? Second by Donaldson. Okay, so we're open for discussion. Oh, it looks like all the regulations are being met. Mr. Hewn brought up one thing about the wetlands, but I think you've addressed that.
Yeah, the I think his concern about the wetland is on very on point. That if there is any state requirement, there's not a county requirement for having a distance from the wetland and the it would certainly behoove the applicant to make sure that that is the case. And with the engineering report for the foundation, would make sure that the tower is pure and not in
Okay, we have on the table a motion to go with alternative number two, which would be with the six conditions. Any final discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Donaldson?
Aye.
Miller?
Yes.
Couser?
Yes.
Gast?
Yes.
Veggie?
Yes. Yeah. Motion carries.
This is a reminder for
Thank you.
The people that are here that this item would be on the November 6th Story County Board of Adjustment.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get my numbers right here this time. And with that, we'll move on to CUP 03-13, the Optimum Wind Conditional Use Permit. And we have Ryan Newstrom.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening.
Again, this is regarding CUP 03-13, also known as an Optimum Wind 1. We have two of those this evening, conditional use permit requests. Several different property owners in the conditional use permit area for this one. Kirk and Elizabeth Peterson, Rick and Lisa Sheldahl, and Thomas Sharpnack have all provided signed option easement agreements for this area. The conditional use permit area is approximately 1 mile southwest of the city of Huxley, size of approximately 160 acres. All the lands are zoned A1 agricultural and classified as agricultural and are within the cooperative planning area tier 2 and 3 of the 90s framework. And again, Huxley is within 2 miles. There you can see the surrounding property owner map of that was sent to all surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of the conditional use permit area, which is highlighted there in red. A little bit close up, this was provided in your application material, a site plan of the proposed turbines of this project that are located in Story County. Three turbines highlighted there in blue. So if we kind of go back a little bit there, there's six parcels. Basically, the three turbines are right smack dab in the middle there, right in between the three parcels to the north and the three parcels to the south. Just kind of zoomed in there. They'll tie in to onto 535th and then down onto Highway 218, which is there, that road to the south, or 210, excuse me. Here you can see that surrounding property owner area and the conditional use permit area in relation to its location from the city of Huxley and the corner of Highway 69 and Highway 210. There are three utility scale, 3 megawatt turbines total, 9 megawatt conventional wind energy conversion system. Turbines are manufactured by Aconia Wind, and each structure is 492 feet, 92 meters to the hub height, and the rotor diameter being 116 meters. Again, Charlie went through each of the standards of approval that we look at with conditional use permits, the general ones, and then the supplemental standards that we all look at commercial wind energy conversion systems, as well as all the submittal requirements that are required and listed in our staff report. And provided in your application materials. Staff commented after we looked at it, each of the supplemental standards for this one have all been met, and additionally, all the submittal requirements required by staff have been satisfied with this turbine. And again, the final standards of approval that we look at, staff noted that just like the previous one, there have been well over 100, I think there's close to 150 now, of these utility-scale turbines that have been constructed in Storey County since we adopted these regulations, and each one has shown that there have been no problems with any of these criteria, and it hasn't been shown in the application that this one should be any different. And again, the burden of persuasion for these things is on the applicant, and they're here to discuss any questions or concerns you may have regarding it. Comments from the interagency review team, David Swanson stated that the wind towers will be assessed according to County Ordinance 179, and Darren Mood noted, the county engineer noted, that they'll need permits from their office for any new driveway locations. Just like the previous ones, property owners were notified on October 2nd, and legal notifications were published on October 3rd. Three recommendations for conditions of approval for this one, very similar to the previous one, as well as these are pretty standard what we've done in the past with these two WECs. First one, all vehicular parking associated with the construction shall take place out of the right-of-way. The applicant shall enter into an agreement with the county for purposes of decommissioning escrow account. Enter an agreement for purposes of providing financial security for road bridge restoration, and a copy of the signed agreement shall be provided to us prior to us issuing a zoning permit. The Storey County Road Authority shall be notified 24 hours prior to construction materials being transported across the jurisdictions, and finally that the applicant shall conduct a pre-construction survey in coordination with the impacted local road authorities to determine the pre-construction condition of the roads that will be used during construction of the TWEX prior to application for the zoning permit. Further noting the applicant is already in process of working on these things with the county attorney and the county engineer. With that, I leave you with the following four alternatives. Questions?
Yes, you said that I must have misheard you. If you back up one slide,
yes.
You said that three of the conditions are the same. I think there's five conditions that are the same as the previous one. All five that are listed there are back in the previous.
I'm not following you.
You said three of the five.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's five conditions.
Or five, they're the same. The only one that is different is that this one doesn't have a six, which is the engineer certification, because
it's already been provided. Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Got it.
Thank you, Ryan. Other questions? we'll probably be back to you. So, is the applicant here? Would you step forward, please?
I'm Steve Thompson, CEO of Optimum Winds. I'm here with Carson Rump, Business Development Manager. We're planning to put some wind turbines there close to Huxley. We've got we're planning to put Axion and 3 megawatt machines there. I'm not exactly sure what questions you might have. So.
I guess I don't know if you have any yet. Any questions here? Okay, we may be back to you.
Okay.
So it was Mr. Thompson and Mr. Ronk?
Ronk.
Pardon?
Ronk.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
And at this point, we have time for public comment. And I would invite anybody that would like to comment on this particular permit to step forward. Yes. Please come on up.
My name is Sandra Lester, and I live a fourth of a mile away from the Tom Sharpneck projected site. And there were like six different portions or little squares. And did you say they were going to be three turbines that were right in the middle of that, or?
Can you point those out? Where do you think they might be?
It was that section where you had six different sections. It wasn't that screen.
It was the next screen maybe, or the bigger one. There.
You can kind of see the squares, those six squares that are there. Those are all
and,
those six.
And where would the three turbines be then? One.
It's kind of hard to see in the light. In the blue there, where's that one? Sorry. But,
one, two.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yep. And would those be the largest turbines that they make then?
Yeah, just like any of the other commercial grade turbines that are in Story County.
You know, I just would like to say that I just received a letter on this, and then the meeting was canceled for a couple of months. And so when my sons and I came into this meeting, there was what I would like to say is a lot of jargon that I don't really understand, that perhaps, you know, you've discussed it and everything. But do we need to decide tonight whether we object to this? Or I don't know how it would affect my property since I just have a home and 4 acres now.
We are recommending committee or commission, and so you can object to us. And the next step after this, again, is going to be what?
So it's to the Board of Supervisors on the first Wednesday of November.
Okay. So you can object to us and then say, please don't make this recommendation. And then if it happens anyway, then you can go to the Board of Supervisors. So.
Yeah,
I guess you should state your issues right now.
Are all of the turbines that are being put up, are they by different companies then, or are they all pretty much are being constructed by just one or two companies, or do we know that? Or
Mr. Thompson, would you be better to answer this, or step up to the microphone, please?
So all three of the turbines would be of the same manufacturer.
Okay.
They'd all be, presently we're planning to do Axiona turbines. That may change, but the focus is all three would be the same type turbines.
And I did see that in the previous one, it was a different manufacturer than what this group is here, correct?
I'm not sure.
I think it was.
I'm calling, to be honest.
That was the people involved in the case, but I think they had a different manufacturer. So, what would you guess? There's several different manufacturers?
I just kind of had a concern that if it affects your property value at all, or there's a lot of things that, you know.
Do you have any questions for that?
Okay. No, that's fine.
It's just that I
just
don't know anything
about this. Yeah. My name is Brad Lester, and I live in Slater. And I'm just curious, this is east-west?
Yeah.
Could you point out where that R west dot is, the location, where the Tom Sharpnack residence is, please?
So I believe
it would be that far.
I believe it's here.
Okay.
That's it. Oh, and then the turbine is...
The turbine? One here. One here. One here.
And then the other side.
And then Tom's property line is, I believe, then that it's kind of hard to see, but the line to the west there, that would be where his.
So this line here, I believe, is his property.
Okay, all right, thank you. Yep, that's what I was curious about. That's all for me, thank you.
Okay.
I guess that's all for me, too. Thank
okay,
you.
Well, thank you very much for stepping forward.
Is there any way we can get information, I wish I'd had it ahead of time.
Certainly.
Okay.
All this information was provided on our website, on the application to
I think the question that she's asking is whether or not it's going to affect property values, and one of the things you asked, and the rest of it certainly is available on the web page. There's quite a thick document that the applicant put together that has a lot of information on it. If you're interested in how it affects property values, there are a lot of these things in Story County, and you just go to the Story County assessor and have a chat with them.
Well, the last thing I will say is, after I received the first letter, that I did call up here, and I didn't get very much information, and I didn't get a website to look at. So that's all.
I would bet you could get directed to one here pretty quickly. And
does it mean that we're going to decide tonight whether to recommend it or not?
Correct, yes.
That's kind of hard to...
Well, like Daryl said, though, if you've got some concerns, then, you know, even after this meeting, you can go to the Board of Supervisors meeting, and you can express your concerns or objections at that point, too.
Thank you, Mrs. Lester. Anybody else? Yes.
My name is Kyle Lester, and I'm from Slater. And I guess my question is the power, do any power direct to the central area where they're at, or is it all going away?
So the power from these turbines will feed into an Alliant distribution sub and will feed the local residents and businesses.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for your... Yep. Please step forward. Please step forward to the microphone, please.
I'm just wondering what their plans are for the future and if they're planning to put more up in our area.
So our projects are all smaller projects, and they're spread out in different localities. So for this particular area, this would be the extent of what we would be doing for this project.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Okay, last call. Okay, hearing none. Commissioners, do you have any final questions of applicant or Ryan? Okay. Hearing none, I would certainly entertain a motion for discussion.
Well, I'd like to make a motion that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends conditional approval of the conditional use permit as put forth in case CUP 0313 to the Story County Board of Adjustment and directs the staff to place the item on the November 6, 2013 Story County Board of Adjustment agenda, and the fifth condition, or five conditions, are the conditions shown on the slide and it's currently up.
Motion by Gass. Is there a second?
Okay.
Second by Miller. And we are open for discussion. I think, you know, what I see, it looks pretty clear. You know, it's meeting all the parameters. Any discussion? Pretty quiet group tonight. Okay, roll call.
Peggy?
Yeah.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Couser?
Yes.
Gass?
Yes.
Okay, and the motion passes. For the Lester family, I would really encourage you to make sure you get on the website and take a look. There's quite a lengthy document here, and prepare yourself then for the future meetings. Can we catch that after the, well?
You received a letter in the mail, is that correct? The website should be listed on there. Someone behind you, I think, can help you. Maybe even up in the header, Charlie.
I can attest that there's a lot of information out there. So, thank you for being here. Thank you for your questions and comments. And with that, we will move on to the fourth item, CUP 07-13, Optimum Wind and Conditional Use Permit.
Yeah, again, this area of approximately 200 acres located between Lincoln Highway and Highway 30, south of Highway 30, just along 590th there. It's a CWEX that's involved with several different property owners, the Kenny Lindstrom Foundation, as well as Randall and Carol Collings, who have all worked on an option easement agreement with the applicant. All the lands are currently zoned A1 agricultural and classified as agricultural, and are in the cooperative planning areas 1, 2, and 3 of the land use framework map. And it's approximately just south of Nevada's little tail that goes out to the west there. And you can see the just to the north there, within the surrounding property owner area, is the ethanol plant, as well as cooperative Lincoln Highway, U.S. Highway 30 there, and 590th Avenue, and you can see most of the six parcels there to the east of 590th, and then as we go south of Highway 30, they're proposing another turbine there on that parcel as well. And then again, the blue ones are all the surrounding property owners that received notice of the hearing. A little bit close up, we'll just go back real quick. There's three proposed on the north part, and then one again on the that south part. And you can see those three there on the left. To the north is Lincoln Highway, and then again 1, 2, and 3 going down pretty much right in the middle of
those 6 miles along the fence line, basically. And the one on 590 stairs to Pike. Highway 3 there to the north. Again, kind of a zoomed out view, and you can see technical difficulties.
Oh, that's better.
This one is 4 turbines, so a total of 12 megawatts, each one 3 megawatts, approximately 2 miles east of Ames, right in between Ames and Nevada there. Manufactured again by Akiona Wind, and each structure is 492 feet, 92 meters to the hub, and rotor diameter is 116 meters. Again, all the standards of approval that we're looking at with these CWECs, as well as supplemental standards. Again, you were provided the application and all that. The applicant did an excellent job of going through each one of these, as well as providing all the submittal requirements that are required for one of these conditional use permits. Staff once again found through our analysis that all the supplemental standards have been met or exceeded by the proposed CWECs, except as noted below, and as well as all submittal requirements have been provided. They're still working with Alliant Energy on two different scenarios for an interconnection design, basically how they tap into the grid. One of those involves an overhead line. If they end up going that way, staff noted that they shall submit a modification to the conditional use permit and should demonstrate the need for that and acceptance of all affected landowners for the Board of Adjustment through that modification process. They're still working with the county engineer on proposed road improvements for 590th for Turbine 4, as noted in the application. And I'll get into this in a little bit too. 590th is a level B maintenance road. And so there's issues they're having with trying to get their vehicles in there for construction and whatnot. And again, Mr. Moon's county engineer's comments go into that a little bit farther, those issues. Again, the big standards that you look at, and again the burden of persuasion being on the applicant. David Swanson with the assessor's office once again noted that once they're constructed, they'll be assessed according to County Ordinance Number 179. And the engineer noted that new driveway locations, through an email sent to the applicant on 9/27. He noted that he wouldn't be able to approve any driveway permit on 590th until the applicant has provided what they're proposing to do on 590th, because they currently do not allow rock to be placed on the roadway since it's a level B maintenance road. He also noted that any changes to the road or maintenance level of the road would need to be approved first by the Board of Supervisors. Notification letters were mailed on October 2nd, and legal notifications were published in the county newspapers on October 3rd. And again, looking at possible conditions that staff recommends, all vehicle parking associated with the construction operation should take place out of the right-of-way, entering an agreement for the county for purposes of decommissioning escrow, as well as financial security for road and bridge restoration during the construction process, and a pre-construction survey in coordination with the impacted local road authorities to determine pre-construction condition of the roads that will be used moving in the CWECs, and notification of road authorities within 24 hours prior to construction, materials being transported across respective jurisdictions, roads to the CWEC site, and completed tabs, and then the applicant shall provide completed plans for turbine interconnection design prior to an application for zoning permit. If the design proposes an overhead line, the applicant shall apply for a minor or major modification to the conditional use permit to the Board of Adjustment as determined by the director. As well as the applicant shall provide a driveway entrance permit for access onto 590th prior to an application for zoning permit. With that, I leave you the following four alternatives. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I'll wait till the lights come on. What questions do we have of Mr. Newstrom? Looks like this one's got a little bit more stuff to go through to get to the end goal here, doesn't it? Well, the driveway and the roads and stuff.
Oh.
Yes, please.
Have they addressed the road issue? I mean, is it a dirt road?
Yeah, it's a level B minimum maintenance road, so it doesn't have any rock in it. Or it's not maintained or plowed by the county. We haven't received any information on the from the applicant in addition to the information we've been provided by them as well as the county engineer of the issue. So they may have more. I know they're working on things, but our office hasn't received any information additionally.
The grade D is just south of 30, not the whole between 30 and Lincoln Way.
Correct.
South of 30.
Just for that, the four turbine.
It's a dirt road and it dead ends.
Any other questions of Mr. Mooster? Okay, well, I think you'll be around, so we'll chat with you later. Is the applicant here? Oh, you.
We are also the applicants on this one. Once again, Steve Thompson, CEO of Optimum Wind. So any questions for us?
Are you able to tell us something about that? I mean, it seems like how much of a dirt road are we talking about? Who's going to have to pay for it if it needs to be rocked prior to getting this accomplished? I mean, what kind of damage is it going to do to local farmers who are trying to get through that area to get, you know, if you're using it? Can you address that at all?
So it's roughly about an eighth of a mile, I believe. Does that sound about right to you? Yeah, about an eighth of a mile. And we haven't finalized the right solution with the county engineer yet. So this was an issue that came up, I think, early last week, and we haven't really addressed it yet, but we will.
Is it possible to leave it a dirt road? I mean, it's not really possible, is it?
I think it is actually possible to leave it a dirt road. Worst case scenario, maybe we have to put rock on it and then remove the rock and return it to the original condition.
Oh. Can you address the overhead lines and what does it mean? Did the overhead lines start at one point or did they go between each turbine? Do they just connect at the road level and go how far? If they had to do overhead lines, what would that look like?
So everything within four turbine site would be underground to a point. And then if we can connect where we prefer to connect, there'll be no overhead. But if we need to run it closer to the substation, according to alliance requirements, then we would have to add overhead lines back to that substation. And that's roughly about a mile of overhead that we'd have to run back to the substation, or under a mile for sure.
Is there currently an overhead line there, or that would be a new something that's not currently in existence? So it would be new poles, new.
There's a line there at the current moment. As we get further along the process with Alliance, information will come to the part as far as do we have to upgrade their line in particular, or do we have to build an alternative line?
we're still in the process.
So there's a possibility that we don't add a new line, we just upgrade the line that Alliant has there already with no real repercussions to us, if anybody. It's also possible the line that's there will carry the load, we don't have to do anything at all. So that's why we don't have an answer at this time. Alliant is still doing their load calculations to see where they stand, and that could be a few weeks.
Other questions of the applicants? Okay, we may have you back up here, but thank you. At this time, we'll ask for comments from the public, and I would ask that you would step up to the microphone, give your name and address, and what you're thinking.
Kingsbury, I live at 24215 580th Avenue. I hate public speaking, but I've got a big mouth. I'm kind of interested in this first meeting I've been to, and I can tell you people have handled a lot of this so far. I'd like to know, like, how many yards of concrete are in the base of these things, and, like, what do they do when they hit an area that's got a tile in it? And then I'd like to know the power line that's going to be running for a mile. First direction does that go from this? And that's all I can pick up right now, but I might have more questions later.
Okay. Thank you. I think the applicant's probably best qualified. I think he had three questions there. How much concrete? What about tiles? And the power line?
I honestly don't know the exact number of yards of concrete that go into that base. It's a lot.
But, in our decommissioning plan, it states the exact number on top. Can you describe the approximate size of the hole so we get an idea? So the foundation will go down about 20 to 25 feet. In width, it'll be about 20 to 25 feet also. I like to describe it as an upside-down mushroom.
Okay.
And the pile line. What happens if you, in digging this, you come across pile lines?
So any damage that we do tile lines has to be repaired. So if we ran into a tile line there, we'd have to run it out around so that it was still connected and where it functions.
And then the final thing was about the power lines. And I think this is if they're overheads, and thinking they would follow, hopefully it would follow the Alliant if that was the case. But if not, would it just go alongside, or how would that be?
So right now, the solution we're trying to come up with is going across Highway 30 from our turbine 4 to our following three turbines north of Highway 30. What we're proposing, we are speaking with the DOT and the county engineer's office along with the road access on, you know, would it be better to build an overhead distribution line from our turbine 4 site to our additional three turbines or bore it underground Highway 30. Also, to mitigate the impact of an overhead distribution line. So these are ongoing solutions along with Alliant Energy and the County Engineer's Office that we've been in dialogue the last couple of weeks.
I think the only one that got a map like this sent to me that's got a bunch of blue squares around where the red is, which means neighboring neighbors. You're diving a lot deeper than a quarter of a mile here. I was just wondering, is this planned possible expansion in the future?
So once again, this particular type of project for us would be a this would be the extent of it. So we're developing the project based on the size of the substation that Alliant has there, and we wouldn't foresee any growth, definitely not in the near future at that site.
Thank you. Mr. Kingsbury, you did a fine job of public speaking.
I volunteer you for all of the organizations around to come give a talk.
Sure.
Hi, Scott Wentz, 59480 Lincoln Highway. So I have a couple questions. What the timeline is for construction, whether it's there's any funding, the wind energy, power, even tariffs, whether that has to be used or that has played a role.
And then, you speak into the microphone a little bit.
Specifically with the timing, we have major construction in the ethanol plant. Highway 30, or Lincoln Way, is a very busy road. So how are we going to handle the traffic with large construction vehicles and deliveries? And what kind of considerations do we have there? We don't want Lincoln Highway to turn into a parking lot in the morning and in the evening. There should be a delivery coming on.
I believe the first question was regarding the timing. So our expectations are that the construction will take place in 2014, starting most likely third quarter of 2014 and completed by the end of the year. And once again, Highway 30 would be used for delivery purposes, but we would try to obviously schedule that so it wasn't creating traffic problems. That would be something we'd work with the county engineer to make sure that we got figured out, I would assume.
I'm not sure of the fact that the federal government would have to see. I mean, that's a DOT government thing with the OEM. So once we actually make the determination to go forward on the project, then the OEM has to get special permits to bring those loads in, and they would have to work with the DOT, and they would base that off of the most efficient way to get the loads in there and keep the traffic from being a problem.
We've had some experience with the wind generators because a couple of them were built right along Highway 30 on the west side of Nevada. Would you consider your construction plans and staging to be materially the same as the other two that we have?
So I can't say for sure, but I would assume those are two 2 megawatt to 8G turbines I think you're speaking of. It's a similar size. These would be 3 megawatt Axiona turbines, but they'll be fairly similar as far as the deliveries that you'll see coming in there. The cranes that will be required, so it would be fairly similar.
Is the funding already secured, or is it dependent on legislative processes and government?
Can you speak up a little bit?
Is the funding secured, or is it a done deal, or are we waiting for more federal money to be the government to start up again?
We're all waiting for the government to start up again. But, yeah, so all of our applications are in and approved for any federal or state support of this project. And there's no deadlines that are looming that we're going to miss because of the shutdown. The project is a pretty solid project that we expect to go forward.
So there's an optimum wind, number one and number two. Is that just for tonight's board meeting, or are there two companies? And then do you guys do the construction, and do you also do the operation?
So we work with another company that will do the construction. We'll hire an EPC contractor to come in and do that. And we will support the turbines on a long term from a O&M standpoint. We'll be responsible for supporting the operations and maintenance of the turbines.
So it's optimum wind then that we call if we see a problem. I'm a quarter mile away, so I'll probably notice it first.
It would be fine to call us if there's any problems. For sure, we'll be supporting the turbines long term.
Thank you, Mr. Wentz.
Hi, Linda Wentz. So the same place as he does.
Okay.
Could you bring up the slide that showed the land parcels? And I guess my question is more. So our property is.
Which one?
Yeah. Oh. In the right hand corner. Right into the end in Lincoln Highway. Right. So we bought our property in 97. When we bought our property and we looked across the street, there was a cornfield or beans, depending on the year. Now there's methanol plant. There was also a golf course there. Now there's going to be another ethanol plant. Now we have wind turbines coming up to the west of us. At what point does the city of Nevada, does Story County, consider the landowners along Lincoln Highway corridor? Because we're getting boxed in. I have no idea what this is doing to our property value. I'm sure it's not good. What rights do we have as landowners with all of this progress? And what is the long-term plan along Lincoln Highway? Because I've heard of different plans. I mean, do we just sell now or what? Because this is not what we purchased in 1997. And I see the city of Nevada profiting from this. The county will probably profit from windmills. We're not profiting by this. We're losing. I mean, at what point do you take into consideration the landowners?
I think probably I'm going to turn it over to either Ryan or Leanne on I'm not sure where we answer your one question, but I'm sure there's a long-range plan for along Lincoln Highway here. Don't know if we can address that at this moment.
Well, I would like you to consider it
mm-hmm.
as you think about approval tonight, because it's very easy to approve these plans and let them keep moving forward, mm-hmm. but you're not the ones living next to this.
Can I say something since I live really close to this whole thing? Okay. I'm Nancy Miller. I live on 600th, halfway between New 30 and Old 30, Lincoln Way and Highway 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Stensland lives right up there in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
We're south of him. When we bought our place, which was 1974, there was nothing up there, okay? So we had the traffic problem. Now, I'm having a hard time visualizing where exactly you guys live.
We're right across from the ethanol plant. When the trucks come out,
what's
at night,
your place look like?
It's the orange one with the red tile roof.
Okay.
When the trucks come out at night, their lights shine right in our living room window.
Come out of the ethanol plant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I understand your concern about property only concern. Listen, you're blowing in the wind. Bottom line, okay. We had no traffic on our road when we bought the place. I mean, if we had somebody coming by, it was because somebody was going to come visit somebody. That's the way it was. All right, so then Key Cooperative, which was called something else back then, they made it the main distribution center. Distribution point. I don't think that's the right terminology for it, but you know what I mean. Then we got Lincoln Way Energy. All right, then the city of Nevada did their flagpole annexation down the ditch, all right, so it became part of Nevada. Then Ames and Nevada had this conflict regarding 590th, okay, because their long-range plan, their balloons overlapped. And so then they got that settled, so that now Ames can do things west of 590th. Nevada is all of east of 590th. Okay? They had this big old meeting regarding planning and zoning, and it's a 20-year plan, it has nothing to do with zoning. And then immediately, you know, like Milan's, you know, I don't know if you know what the battle that they went through, okay? And Nicole's and so on. We have our little area there, on the east side of 600th. They took that out of their silly little long-range 20-year plan, which has to do with zoning everything into Nevada. Okay? You guys are not part of that 20-year plan. I know that from seeing the map. And I've got a copy of it if you want to see it sometime. All right. In terms of where's the consideration for us, for the people across the road from us, for Stensland, the people west, Christy Weed, Stensland, you're not, okay, you're on west of them, right? Okay. None of that is in this long-range Nevada plan. That's where the concern is, all right, for us, for you guys, and so on. But in terms of traffic and lights coming out, forget it.
I know. I'm just, so we have this parcel that we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Where, you know, is the next, are they going to be on the east side of us? I mean, what's going to be on the east side of us after this?
Well, on the east side of you guys, that's property that's owned by Christy Weed's family. Christy
well,
Weed's
this
family.
Property was owned by someone, too. And
yeah, I understand it, but they sold it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? It's called money. Right? I don't know who owned it. Right? I think it was some trust, if I'm right. But at the same time, you've got landowners. I know Jeff and Christy Stensland and their families are not going to be selling theirs. I can guarantee you that one. So it's not going to butt up to 600. It's not going to go that far. But so you've got, in this whole Story County area, you've got a whole lot of folks that were residents and farming the land buku years ago. Now, some of those folks have passed on. It's gone, the land's gone into trust, and in some cases, the original kids of the original property owners, all right, have sold the land to people in New York City and so on and so forth. So there's not any active participation in the process of the land and how the land is used. I've seen that come up a number of times in going to Nevada, city council meetings, going to board of supervisors meetings. Now I'm on the planning and zoning commission. I've seen all these things transpire. Okay, the reality is when the ethanol plant went in, when DuPont got their approval, we were not involved in that process, right? Because it's Nevada. So we were not, the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Board of Supervisors, were not involved in it. So where the Holloden ought to be is the Nevada City Council.
Well,
call a Von Schultz up.
Yeah.
Okay, where are we going with this here?
He's concerned about lights going in and traffic and so on.
That's an example. And with all due respect, you just said that I'm sitting in the wind, blowing in the wind, thinking I'm going to stop any of this.
That's right.
But you're sitting on the Zoning and Planning Commission. You have authority as to whether this proceeds or not. So as a citizen, my understanding was I could come here and voice concerns about windmills going up next door to me.
How are the windmills going to negatively impact you?
Is it noise? Is it the strobe effect of the light coming when the sun goes down and the blades are going around? It makes shadows on your house. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly to the west of us. So when the sun sets in the west, am I going to be seeing strobing light in my house?
So, okay.
The guy that's building them.
I don't think we need to get into arguments about this. I know where you're coming from emotionally here.
Answer the lights question, please. And the noise.
So for each of these projects, we've submitted with the application a shadow flicker study and a noise study. So we're within the legal limits, or well below the legal limits on each for all the turbine sites.
That answer the question?
Not quite. In her discussion, her concern, how far away does a building, if here's the wind turbine, and we got a house here,
yeah.
All right, how far does this house have to be away from the wind turbine before the flicker effect is non-existent?
Well, It doesn't just depend on the distance, it also depends on which direction the house lays from the wind turbine. And there's a pretty good map in the shadow flicker study that shows how that impacts the different areas.
Is that part of our packet?
Yes.
Can you show that, Ryan?
No. I have it right here.
Can I just ask a question here? Is this a concern for some of the rest of you? Okay, so maybe we need to hear from some of the rest of you before we continue the discussion. And while he's looking up that information for us. I'm sorry to take over now.
Is this okay?
Yeah. Randy Brecky.
A little louder, please.
Randy Brecky. We live west of this proposed area, half a mile, right on Lincoln Highway. So I guess we have some concerns. We would prefer they didn't come with the turbines to our area, so we would be in your camp. I will say, a little disappointed that your take, Nancy, as though you have no vote when you do have a vote. So I would have to say that's disappointing to me to know that we have representatives who claim to have no vote. But one question I have is, have the landowners come to you for your study, or do you approach the landowners for the turbines?
We approach the landowners.
So, how long has your company been in existence?
2 years.
And can you tell me, with this project, a percentage of this project is, how much of the project is subsidized and how much of it is private money?
I don't think I can give you the exact amount, but the capital that goes into the initial build will be all private. There's federal and state production tax credits that will be part of the project, but I can't really give you the exact numbers right now.
And then, what's the life expectancy of the turbines?
So the life expectancy of these turbines is a minimum of 20 years, but normally this particular turbine would last up to 25 years.
And at that time, what do they decommission? Do they remove them? Or is there a plan beyond that?
So it's required that they be removed once they're no longer functioning.
I understand there's an escrow amount. Is that... is it a set fee or a set percentage per year, or is that something that's larger in the beginning? If there was a company failure sooner than later, my assumption is it would take, after watching some of these go up, a fair amount of cash to remove it.
So the decommissioning plan normally, there's a set amount estimated to remove the turbine at whatever point it would fail. There's a lot of scrap value in the turbine. So the scrap value in the turbine is almost enough to fund the decommissioning. But there's some additional money that's set aside in an escrow account. It's normally... more set aside as you get closer to the end of the life of the turbine. That is
Is there an initial amount that is deposited in an escrow account when the construction starts?
That depends really on the plan from the county a little bit as far as what they find acceptable. So we have a decommissioning plan. The monies are not needed in years until obviously somewhere in year 2025.
Right.
And because most of the value required to do the decommissioning is actually in the scrap value of the turbine, we normally would not start with an initial investment in there because we would wait till closer to year 15 to start that. But if the county requires that, we do that.
I know that with the Dathan Lake project up there by Zering, the county did require that was Florida Light and Power.
Mm-hmm.
They did require Florida Light and Power to deposit a very sizable, I don't know the exact dollars, but a very sizable amount, and then of course it would accrue interest so that those monies, as the cost of living increases, so would these monies available. Okay, and like you said, there is quite a bit of money, scrap value. However, we don't know what that scrap value will be 20 years from now. You know, just like price of copper has changed. But there are dollars per se that have been deposited. Where? I'm not sure.
Do you happen to know if there's an inflation calculation in that, or is it?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think there's an inflation factor.
And in regards to the decommissioning on these items, I hope don't show up.
Yeah.
Would they restore it back to
farmland?
Roads would be
exactly
removed in the. Okay.
Yeah, the primary concern is the farmland.
My recollection goes that they have to remove the concrete, I think, at least 4 feet under the surface.
I thought it was deeper than that, but. But you would be able to farm it again.
Okay. The only other thing I guess I can think of at this point is, and the lady's not here, I guess, anymore, but the web page that you referred her to seems very general, and I think it would have been expedient if we had given her something a little more focused on that, although I'm perhaps not correct in saying that, but it looked very general, so I think it would have been nice if we could have got her a step or two further down the in finding that information.
Can I speak to that? The agenda is put out the Thursday before the meeting, and within the agenda there's a link to the staff report for each item. So everything that Ryan or Charlie show up there on the screen is also out there for you to view ahead of time. So there is a link on there. There just might be, you know, if you'd like me to show you that to you sometime, I can do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's within the agenda, so I don't know what page you looked at, Randy, but I could help you through that or everyone through that afterwards.
Well, no,
if
actually.
Like. Or just the letter.
I think I could probably do fine with the information I had. I didn't feel like she left confident that she was going to get anywhere on that.
Right, and we also include that phone number if anybody has questions, and we did receive quite a few questions, or phone calls anyway, just, hey, what's going on?
Good, thank you.
I think we're in the corner.
We are on the, live in the old Kingsbury.
Okay.
Most people would know it by that.
Yeah.
So.
The dual barn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Brecky.
My name is Suzanne Brecky. I'm Randy's wife and reside with him in that
city.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that Nancy's comments about, the farmers that we once knew who lived on the farm and took care of it, I know that some of that has passed, probably a lot of it. But for those of us who've farmed it for Randy his entire life, this is a lot bigger issue than the corporate farm who lives in California, who who lives in New York. We want to preserve our land. We want to preserve our heritage. We want our children to enjoy our property in the future years. We want to know the country as it is. We want to smell our dirt. We don't want lights in our eyes. We want to enjoy the country for what it is and for what we love it for. And so for me, I'm adamantly opposed to any turbines anywhere close.
Thank you.
I'm Scott Wynn again. I have a thought of a question. While listening to the decommissioning discussions with the escrow accounts and not necessarily having a balance in the beginning, that concerns me. My question is, these proposed turbines are, I assume they're the newer style where you have the carbon fiber blades?
These are the newer style of turbines, yeah.
So the carbon fiber blades have zero scrap value, but the older ones had aluminum, which would have significant value. The steel, would it be the steel, the tubular steel?
Yeah, most of the scrap would be steel that would be worth some money.
So I'm concerned that should the problems continue in Washington and the production tax credit go away, that a few years into the life cycle before the escrow account has been built up, there's a natural gas boom right now. Electricity can be produced cheaply with natural gas. If the production tax credit goes away for wind, it's not profitable. And if the company goes bankrupt and walks away before the escrow account is fully funded, there won't be money to decommission the wind turbines.
Is it Mr. Wendt? Thank you. Sir?
My name is Randy Collins, 58853 250th Street. I'm one of the landowners this is being proposed on. I am fully, 100%, totally in favor of this. I look at it, and when this was brought to my attention, and yes, they came to me as a possibility to do something like this, and I ran it by my wife, and I said, you know, we harvest underneath these things up in the north part of Story County, then it really, you can deal with it. It's not really a big, big issue. And I said, be glad to take you up there, let you sit underneath one of those things, see what you think about the sound, the noise. And as my wife described it, well, the blades go whoosh on some turbines, not all turbines. The turbines that the Chinese put up outside of Nevada, there isn't much noise to those things. My uncle is also an owner of this property that we live on, that I farmed on my entire life. I brought him out here from California. I said, what do you think? We met with Carson Rump and an associate of his. I was tickled pink. I'm going, the wind almost blows every day of the week. Almost. This thing's 492 feet in the air. It's catching wind that we can't really feel in the morning. I'm totally in favor of it. We're harnessing something that exists. We're not having to create anything. It's already there. I understand the strobe effect. It does affect some people. And that does need to be looked at for sure. But I am tickled pink that I have the opportunity to do something like this. Totally tickled pink. I wish I could have more. But I understand FAA regulations kind of restrict that. Too close to the Ames Airport. I really do regret not being able to have more. Because I can farm around them. It's not a problem. I'm just tickled pink. My uncle is extremely tickled pink as well. He's more of an environmentalist than what I would say that I am, necessarily. And he's tickled pink about it. The land has been in our family since my great aunt and my grandma bought it. Not planning on getting rid of it anytime soon. Just really in favor of the project, totally. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
another question. You said that it will tie into an Alliance substation.
You speak into that microphone just a little.
Sorry.
Thanks.
He said that it would tie into an Alliance substation, and then it will just go out on the transmission grid. Is that correct? Are there more efficient ways to produce electricity so that the consumer, the utility that wants to purchase or needs to purchase energy, would be more likely to purchase a different form of energy than wind energy? What's it going to do to the ratepayer, the taxpayer, the citizen? Do you know how it affects their bill?
So I don't know exactly how it affects your bill, but I do know that one of the stipulations from the utility is that they don't pay more than the avoided cost. So the rate that we'll get from them is based off of their avoided cost, so they're not paying us a premium to get renewable power. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, I can't say what the utility is going to do, but the way the utility prices buy the power from us is based off of their avoided cost. So the expectation is that it shouldn't affect your rates at all.
To the microphone, please.
So who do you expect is going to buy this power? Have you approached, like, neighboring utilities in just Alliance?
Alliance will buy all the power.
And actually, Alliance will purchase all the power from us, and then they'll resell it to the residents that buy power from Alliance or commercial users.
Do you know how this compares for efficiency compared to other forms of energy? Like, say, natural gas, coal burn facilities, how does wind power, the cost of wind power on the grid, how does it compare?
So the cheapest form of power right now is most likely natural gas, and clearly that's the cheapest way to produce power. But one of the things that all utilities do is try to have several different methods of generating power, because natural gas is low now. 10 years from now, natural gas prices may be much higher. So they try to have many different ways to produce power. And part of the initiative in Iowa and even in the U.S. is to generate more power through renewable sources. So this is the most efficient method to generate power through a renewable source. One of the things we can do, too, on the noise and shadow flicker studies, if there's specific questions, we can do some additional studies on that to get some information to particular people if they're interested. We can take a look at that if that's an issue. We do have it we have data in the presentation that we gave you guys, and that I assume is something they can get offline. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that copied online?
Yes.
So they can get to it online, but if there's additional issues or questions, they can contact us and we can take a look at what's drilled down into their particular home and see what the real issues there are.
I think that would be good. Before we go any further, I want to keep things moving along toward this objective, and I'm going to compliment Mrs. Brecky and Mrs. Wendt. You guys came right out and you said your piece. We know what you mean. We got a bunch of people dancing around with questions. So please say what you mean and let's get to the point.
Scott Wynn again. What I'm wondering, the owner benefits from the monthly or yearly rental, the county taxpayer benefits. The folks who live in the affected area, though, do not benefit. Wouldn't it be possible to offset some of our property taxes, perhaps, by half of the added added revenue. Wouldn't it be possible to answer some of these flicker questions by having the wind energy producer offer to plant screen trees so that we wouldn't have to deal with the flicker or see the turbines unless we chose to? It's great to be a supporter of wind energy and profit from it, but if you have to live next to it with no benefit, it changes the equation quite a bit. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So regarding the second issue, if there are significant shadow flicker issues or noise issues, definitely that would be something that we would consider. So we'll definitely take a look at your location and see how it impacts your location and what we can do that way.
Are you blowing smoke or are you serious? Okay. I just look.
So at the end of the day, if we have people upset with us and frustrated with us all the time, that doesn't work very well for us either. And it's not that expensive to plant some trees if that helps with the shadow flicker issues. I'm not real sure of the exact location of their home, so it would be nice maybe to get your information, maybe even after the meeting, and we can, Carson and I can take a look at your particular locations and see what the real issues are there.
Thank you, sir.
I realize we go through a second iteration here, so between now and the second iteration, we go to the next board. We would definitely prefer to address these issues so that people are more comfortable at the next meeting.
May I ask you, sir, before you step away, have you considered other locations that are less populous?
For sure we have. Part of what drives these projects is proximity to the substation. So these are projects driven around an Alliant program that allows us to produce power and put it on their distribution grid. So a lot of our decisions about location are based on the location of the actual substations. So the further we would move away from that substation, the more costly it would be to install it, the more overhead line that would have to be put in place.
Let's see if we can bring this the public session. Any final comments from the public? Okay. okay. We have a request for about a 5-minute recess. Would that be okay with everybody?
Sure.
We are going to start up at 7:29. So we'll go on recess for just a few minutes. Okay, we are seconds away from 10:29, so let's resume and let's get going again here. Okay, Mr. Gass, you had a question. But first of all, public comments. I think we came to a close. Is there anyone else that has anything new to add? Hearing none, I'll close the public comment section. And Mr. Gass, you had a question, I think.
The applicant was going to give a brief statement concerning the flicker report.
So, I think the best way to address this, I think the winds are the worst affected, and if there's others that feel like they're affected by that, what we'd like to do is work with them offline, get them the actual study information so they can see what the expectations would be and see if there's ways that we can work with them to mitigate the effects of the shadow flicker, if that sounds okay.
It's my understanding that this would be the same as some of the others. In other words, regardless of whether we approve or disapprove tonight, you still have the opportunity to go before the Board of Supervisors when it comes before them. Which, my point is, it gives you additional time to do some additional study.
Okay, let's
have time to do it.
Let's see if we have any questions from the commissioners here yet. And then we'll entertain a motion and open up for discussion.
Any further questions? Okay. With that, would anybody like to make a motion?
What's our motion, man?
I'm tired.
I will like to move that the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommend conditional approval of the conditional use permit as put forth in case CUP 0713 to the Story County Board of Adjustment, and directs the staff to place an item on the November 6, 2013 Story County Board of Adjustment agenda. And the conditions are the seven conditions that were listed on the slide, and I would like to add an eighth condition that the applicant meet with adjacent residents to fully discuss any shadow flicker mitigation that may be appropriate, and prior to the November 6th Story County Board of Adjustment meeting.
Motion by Gast, adding a condition. Is there a second to that?
Second
by Donaldson. And we are open for discussion.
Well, certainly want the, all public comments to know that we heard you and that we do take into consideration all your concerns, because it is your life and your well-being. And to know that we are directed to approve these things if they meet the criteria, unless these five different items, unless you can show, present evidence that one of these five items would happen. And I have not seen evidence to that tonight, unfortunately. So please understand that we do hear you. And, yeah, I'll end with that.
Any other comments?
I want to apologize if I upset either one of you that was addressing. I do take these things seriously, and just like Nancy Kaiser said, you know, we've got rules and regs that we have to follow, and if an applicant meets all of those conditions, then we've got to. Now, there have been times, you know, that we, I can remember one specifically, that we asked the applicant to build a fence because it involved some animals, okay? And the applicant was perfectly able to do that kind of thing. My point is, you know, there's sometimes that we can make some recommendations. But we're pretty well, here's the regulations, here's the restrictions, here's the requirements. And as, like Nancy said, as long as those are met. Okay? But I did hear your concern. I hear the concerns also. And I really am sorry that you get the lights coming out of Lincoln Light Energy. That's really got to be a nuisance.
Any other comments? Any other discussion? I'll say, while I'm empathetic to, and I do appreciate you being here, especially being in a very civil manner here, I'd be in the same boat as you are, too. I would probably not be crazy about having those around me. However, I do think they're good projects. I will vote yes to recommend. Because I think it does meet all the criteria. If the criteria is not right, then it should be changed, I guess, in the future. But for now, I think the criteria is right. I think Mr. Thompson is trying to do a good job of listening to people and take their concerns into consideration. So, okay, final chance. Okay, then let's vote. Roll call.
Yeah. Beggy?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Kauser?
And the motion carries. I want to thank you all for being here, and we did listen. But it's good to be here to voice your concerns, so thank you very much. So with that, we'll move on to documents. Where are we at here? Amendments to the Code of Ordinances. We are going to skip, as we get down here, we are going to skip something tonight. And that will be amendments to the organizational policy.
To reinvent myself here a little bit. Okay, what we're reviewing tonight here, and hopefully really quick, is the changes to the Stillwater County Code of Ordinances. Kind of going through how we got here. This year, 2013 Story County Planning and Development Work Program did include what we called a zoning map audit. That was a project that was identified by the Story County Board of Supervisors in response to the CPAT project that some of you are probably familiar with that took place a few years ago. Kind of a two-step project in this zoning map audit. First step is to do an inventory of the current zoning districts for the unincorporated areas of Story County and recommend possible changes, revisions, etc. After we do that, the next one will be to identify possible new and revised zoning districts and zoning district boundaries. So kind of what we're doing here is the first portion of it. We've looked through our zoning code from staff standpoint. We had problems that have arisen, I guess, over the last few years, and we're able to make some recommendations based off that. I'm just going to outline those recommendations right now. First, as you're aware, we have two agricultural districts, three residential districts. We have a commercial district and then two industrial districts. Focusing more on those commercial and industrial districts, we do have the C commercial district, the I-1 light industrial district, and the I-2 heavy industrial district. That's proposing to the Planning and Zoning Commission this evening to combine the C commercial district and the I-1 light industrial zoning district into one zoning district. Up until Story County adopted the Story County Land Development Regulations on February 28th of 2006, Story County used to allow for, and this is in quotes, all uses involving light industrial, laboratory, manufacturing, fabricating, and commercial activities, excluding those uses specifically permitted and listed in the I-2 district. That was a principal permitted use in the I-1 light industrial district. So where you had the I-1 zone land, you had light industrial uses plus all those commercial uses that were permitted that were allowed in that one district. With the adoption of the land development regulations in 2006, we did remove that commercial activity clause from the I-1 district. So at that point, we tried to separate the light industrial zoning districts from the commercial districts to be more exclusive. With that, the boundaries of the official zoning map were never amended to change those commercial uses that were taking place in the I-1 district to the C commercial district, and because of that, those commercial uses became legally established non-conforming uses. Looking at some of the numbers we have currently for those zoning districts, we have about 376 acres of land that is zoned commercial currently, and about 204 acres zoned I-1 light industrial. I'm kind of alluding to this through the presentation so far, but the current landscape in the county has many of the areas where there are both light industrial and commercial uses taking place. We did note that commercial and light industrial uses, especially in an unincorporated area, they do have similar impacts to the health, safety, and general welfare of the public. And in most cases, light industrial uses will generate far less traffic than your typical commercial uses. Previously, when these two uses were both allowed in the I-1 light industrial zoning district, we went back and looked, but there were never no negative impacts that were noted by having those combination of uses allowed. Going through real quick on just some of the areas that we're looking at, and I'll try to point them out in the map here above too. I'm going to go through in kind of quadrants of the county. This first quadrant would be the northwest quadrant up by Story City, Gilbert, and Roland area. And you can see kind of
the outlined in blue areas here. You have a commercial zoning designation up here on that Story City corner. You've got commercial use taking place just down Highway 69 a little bit. This would be the Gilbert corner where the Casey's gas station is. You've got a light industrial zoning district down here. That's kind of where General Filter is, down by the Aerosmith Trail area, just across from A to Hayden Park. This light industrial district right here, that's actually a carryover. Those are the Gilbert Lagoons. We used to allow, we used to only permit lagoons and industrial zoning districts a long time ago, and that's just carried over through the years and has remained in industrial use, but it is fully just the lagoons for Gilbert. Moving on to the what would be the northeast quadrant of the county. We've got a lot of light industrial and commercial uses. These are the Zerion Lagoons right here, and then commercial use taking place between Zerion and Highway 65, and more up on that corner there, too, by Zerion. And then in the Fernald area, there are some light industrial uses taking place adjacent to the railroad tracks there in Fernald. Kind of more of our extensive area, I would say, here would be in the southwest quadrant, along Lincoln Highway here, just to the west of Ames. There is a small piece down here along State Avenue, just south of Ames. You have areas right at the confluence of Highway 30 and Interstate 35 in this area. Back over here to where Vetter and Flexicoil place is out there on Highway 30. Along Airport Road in Nevada, right over here in this area. This would be Hollab's Corner for Hollab's Greenhouse. This one right here being Country Landscapes along Lincoln Highway. And then going down a little bit further, this is just on the north side of Huxley on Highway 69. And there's a small one as well down here by Slater, where the I believe McFarland has a clinic in that area. And then just continuing, we do have a few on the east side of Nevada. That's all vacant land right there, but it is zoned commercial. This is the Twin Anchors golf course area here, and there's a few small ones you'll see kind of pop up. This is where El Mako, right here just north of Nevada, has an area. And there's a small farmstead right there that has a commercial zoning designation, and we're not really able to track why that's there, but something that probably needs to be cleaned up in the future. So that just gives you an idea of... Do they?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting to know. Well, it's good to have you on the commission. Just, I was looking through that one, and we could never really figure out what that was. But
We did the corner south of Collins there a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. And that's an A2 designation for that. Yep. And the A2 is not really being changed, and what we're not recommending to change much of the A2, but... Yeah, you know, from the naked eye, I don't know if too many people differentiate between commercial and A2, but when we're looking at zoning changes, there is a difference there. So, I'll stop at that, I guess, on the combination of the two, and I'm just going to go through this step by step, and if there's any questions on the combination of the two, I'd answer them at this time before moving on.
Well, there must be some benefit coming out of this.
Well, that is. Yeah, and again, it's been a, what I would say, an ongoing problem. There's a lot of areas. If a few of you might remember the Man Cave Estates, just on the east or west side of town here in Nevada. They did a rezoning from a light industrial to a commercial, and was pretty much a commercial building. And it's when it was always there, the building's been up. It's always been a commercial building. And when we did that zoning change to light industrial, any change in use at that point would have to come through a rezoning. So there's an example right there to where they had to change to the commercial zoning designation. Being out there, you know, there's really no change that's taking place. But again, it's just because of the zoning districts that had to take place. So. You know, I've been telling the few people that have called in on this one, I don't see necessarily us taking anything away from a landowner. If anything, we're actually giving them more uses because we're allowing people with light industrial uses to have a commercial use now and vice versa. So.
And many of the light industrial uses that are there are not commercial.
are identical in many respects to a commercial.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's
it. It's difficult to tell from the outside whether it is commercial use or whether it is indeed a light industrial use, because there might be some assembly going on. I see where it becomes a real difficulty for the public to understand the difference, and for zoning enforcement to really toe a line that this is light industrial and not a commercial activity.
And the key word there, and one thing I do want to emphasize, is that it is only light industrial. We're still not allowing heavy industrial uses, which are, you know, for example, the ethanol plant, even though that's not inside, or not in the county, inside the city of Nevada, but that would be something that would be a heavy industrial use, but we're not allowing for those uses to be combined. That's still differentiated. Any other questions on that, and I'll move on to the other changes. And if there are any that come up, feel free to go back. Yeah, there's a few more minor things on here as well, too. Yeah, because what we're presenting to you, and you'll see the red lines and strikeouts, it's that whole document that we're presenting to you. So if there's things that you want changed in there, you'd have to make that as part of a motion to get the to maybe amend a few of our recommendations. So with that combination, staff's recommendation is to simply call this new combined zoning district the CLI, which is the commercial/light industrial zoning district. Pretty simple, in my opinion. However, with that, we used to have the I-1 and the I-2. The I-2 heavy industrial district may need to be changed or updated because you don't have an I-1 in front of the I-2, so we're just simply recommending changing that to the HI heavy industrial district. Then going back to some of our residential districts, we're recommending, first of all, we have the R-1 and the R-2 district. The main difference between those are the lot size requirements, amongst many other things, but the R2 requires smaller lot sizes than the R1 district. Those are presumably set up to have one district be able to develop at an urban feel, which is the R2 district, and one between an urban and a rural feel, which is that R1 district. That presumption with the AIM-driven fringe planning that we have done, that presumption has also been there when recommending zoning decisions within the AIM-driven fringe plan. To kind of solidify our point on those two districts, we're recommending changing the R2 residential district to the R2 urban residential district, and changing the R1 district from the R1 residential district to the R1 transitional residential district. And then you'd ultimately have the urban residential, the transitional residential, and then the AR, agricultural residential, would remain unchanged. So you kind of get that almost three tiers of development set up with that naming convention. We're not recommending any changes with any of the substance of those districts, just solely the names of them.
Many urban or city zoning districts are named R1 and R2. And if you're in town and it's an R2, you are allowed to have duplex. If you town and it's R2 district, are you allowed to have duplex?
Yep.
So you're still going to have the use of it that we've had in the past, and there is some public understanding of what R1 and R2 mean, but you feel from a zoning administration perspective that these name changes are going to benefit.
I think it's exactly what you said. It's a better understanding of what we're trying to achieve with the two zoning districts.
They'll still be called R2. So
yeah.
R2 urban residential.
Yeah. We're adding just the words urban in the R2 and the word transitional in the R1.
Okay.
Any questions on that? Changes to principal permitted uses. Obviously, with the combination of the C and the I-1 districts, we're going to combine those principal permitted uses into the one district. That's easy enough to be said. However, we did want to note that with the C district, currently we include specific examples of commercial uses that are allowed. We list these in a manner that leads to, say, including but not limited to, for example, gas stations, office buildings, commercial storage. We just list specific examples, but it isn't limited to those specific examples. We allow for all commercial uses. Not that, this has really ever created much of a problem, but just to give the public a better understanding, we're proposing to delete those specific examples as really it's common knowledge to what a commercial use is. And again, I think this will give the general public, they'll be less inclined to assume that only particular commercial uses are allowed, and those ones that are not specifically listed are not allowed. So we're not taking away those specific uses from the commercial district. We're just saying that we're not going to include those as a list of what is included because, again, common knowledge is those are commercial uses. Those would be allowed in the commercial zoning district. Questions on that? A few months ago. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, the heavy industrial with the light fabricating, the light manufacturing and stuff like that, we'd still include that as in there, but we're not saying, for example, light petroleum plant. I don't even know if that is such a thing, but, again, we're not listing the specific use. We're just listing the type.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What's permitted because it's not, permitted by not being permitted or not being required to be permitted.
Yep, exactly. Yep. A few months ago, the Story County Board of Adjustment received a variance request for a dog kennel in the A1 district. It is something that staff has known about for a while, and this particular request was right on the edge of a large residential area in the county. Because of this, the Board of Adjustment asked staff to look at, if it was Story County's best interest to keep a kennel as a principal permitted use in the A1 district. The way staff sees this, the A1 and the A2 district, the way staff sees this as a kennel, when you look at its impact, it's very similar to a conditional use permit. Not necessarily a wind turbine like the three conditional use permits that you reviewed this evening, but other conditional uses that have been permitted. Again, the kennel just kind of fits in with a conditional use permit. So we were proposing to just strike kennel from the principal permitted use in the A1 district and then move that into the list of conditional uses that are allowed. Furthermore, public schools have always been a principal permitted use that have been listed in our zoning district, and I think when zoning was implemented at that point, public schools were not nearly as large as they are right now. I kind of tied this back specifically to the example of churches. We used to allow churches as a principal permitted use, but over time, churches have evolved to be much bigger than they were when zoning was implemented in the county. I kind of feel the same way with public schools on this one, too, is that they've just evolved over time to be a more intense use. And because of that, staff does not feel that it's a good idea to keep those as a principal permitted use, but again, add those into the conditional use chapter of the ordinance so we can review the impact on them and permit them accordingly.
Is there any district in which kennels or schools are a use permitted by right?
Right now, public schools are a use permitted by right in the A1, I believe.
Well,
kennels would still be a permitted use in the commercial district just because it's a commercial use. Public schools, no. They would be a conditional use in every chapter.
Is there any legal concern for having a use which is only permitted as a conditional use and not ever permitted as a principal use in the district? And I don't need an answer for this today. You can see the thing about it, if not, great.
That's a good point.
At one time, I read an article years ago that said that was a concern. It may not be a concern.
Well, no, again, I go back to, and if it is, I think it's another thing that we're going to have to look at if that ever does become a concern, because I think we have quite a few conditional uses, wind turbines, for example, that we do not allow by right in any district. They're all conditional uses. So, yeah, and if that is the case, that's a good question. I really don't know the answer to that. I've never heard that or thought about that. But going back to the kennels, we do, again, allow the kennels by right in the commercial district. So, lastly, changes to Table 90.1. This is the conditional use chapter. I kind of explained this already, but we're adding kennels as a conditional use in the A1 and the A2, public schools as a conditional use in all zoning districts. Lastly, just combining the conditional uses in the C and the I1 districts. So with that, kind of want to go over some of our next steps from here. First, we're going to be reviewing all our zoning districts boundaries on the official zoning map. We're currently working with the City of Ames and Gilbert and reviewing the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. We have a lot of zoned areas, as you saw up there, on the City of Ames, and if there's going to be any changes that come out of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, we need to change our zoning districts to be in accord with that. One thing staff wants to do, this is something that, at least since I've been here, that we haven't done, but we want to start calculating some possible population projections within the county, possibly within the unincorporated area, too. That's going to help us identify the amount of land that we do need for future residential, commercial, and industrial growth. After that, we want to do an inventory of the amount of land available in the county for future growth. To know if we need to maybe down zone some land or actually zone further for some more growth. Once those numbers are available, again, we'll be able to look for areas where zoning changes can be made. First of all, to better reflect the growth needs of the county. Second of all, to really hit home on the agricultural preservation policies of the county. See if there's any way we can maybe take some land out of, for example, R1 zone land, put it back in agricultural to really hit that agricultural preservation policy of the county home. So with that, I know I didn't include this in your memo, but I do have it up here on the screen above, just your basic alternative to the changes. So hopefully I haven't confused anybody too much, but I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you have on our recommendations.
Questions?
I guess the conditions probably would be if there's any changes. I didn't hear what he said. I said I didn't hear what he said, but no, I guess instead of, you know, conditional approval on this, I guess a better way to say it would be, is there any changes that you have to what we're recommending would be alternative number two. So maybe instead of conditional approval, recommending changes to what we have proposed.
I personally see you as the professionals in this.
Thank you.
That's true.
I think that the changes that you're making will benefit the public by helping them understand the ordinance, because it will make things more clear what the goal should be.
In a public hearing before you...
Let somebody else make the motion. Oh. I'm sorry. Any public comments? Yeah. I'm sorry.
the Lone Ranger.
Grant Lemire, 5615 Lincoln Way, Ames. I just got one concern, I guess, and kind of a question. It's property tax. Light industrial right now, same type of property, and if it's a zone as commercial, would they be the same property taxes per year?
Yeah. Do you have an answer? Yeah. Usually what I think with your typical light industrial uses, and we can check with the assessor's office on this, but my assumption would be with light industrial uses, they're probably already assessed at a commercial rate instead of an industrial rate. I'd have to go through and look, but every time we make all these maps when we're looking at rezonings and stuff, and we'll always look at what the land is classified as, and we hardly ever see an industrial classification as far as assessment goes. You'll see it, with, again, the ethanol plant out here, you'll see an industrial classification, I believe, with Martin Marietta north of Ames, you'll see an industrial classification there. So my assumption is that most of those light industrial uses that are taking place currently all are assessed commercially, because there is a difference between zoning and classifications. You'll see it on your tax bill. Sometimes you'll see people who have residential zoning, but they're assessed agriculturally because even though their land's zoned residential, they're still farming it, so they're taxed.
Right. Correct, and I'm sure it's going to be a tough comparison on such prior to this, such land that's zoned commercial right now and such land mm-hmm. that's very similar zoned light industrial to compare. That's my main concern is mm-hmm. now that if we transition these two together, will the property taxes per year go up? That's a big concern.
Yeah. And we did present, we have an area to review committee that looks at all this stuff, and we bring in various departments from there, and I know the assessor's office has seen these changes. They didn't voice any concerns to that effect, and I would feel, with this process that they would have voiced some concern. I can double check on that, though, for you, and just to make sure that, there probably isn't going to be anything, but I don't foresee that happening, though.
Yeah, okay.
Of course, I'm not the assessor.
Sure. Everything else, I'm very comfortable with, but... that is a high concern level, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
My experience with the assessor's office is they go out and they look at the property and they assess based upon the use of the property, not its potential use. Zoning is potential use. Its assessment is actual use.
Yeah.
And so changing the name of the class. Never has an impact on the assessment of the property.
Okay, so
I've never seen an impact.
All right.
But it would be the best person to ask would be the assessor.
Yeah, okay. I was going to do that today before the meeting and didn't look at it.
Should have asked. Boy yelled at me about, they go out there and they make their assessment based upon the use of the property.
And that's what they do on my property as commercial right now, and I'm very comfortable with that. But as we join with the light industrial, I'm concerned that it may change in the wrong way for myself.
It's mm-hmm.
wrong way
if you change the use.
Okay, mm-hmm. Then I'm comfortable.
Property.
Thank you very much.
What business
do you have? Rental property.
Rental property?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lemire. And then real quick, too, we did have one comment that we did receive through email from Zirda and Donald Grooms. They live in the Shipley area. Yeah, it's Shipley down there. I'm trying to think of that incorporated areas. But Shipley, which is just to the southwest of Nevada down there. We actually, this is one of the reasons we're looking at these possible changes, but we have a lot of commercially zoned land down there. Where there's actually residences on that commercial land. And the conversation I had with her was, you're zoned commercial, you probably want to be residential. And she asked, well, what happens if I want to build on a vacant lot? and I more or less said that you'd have to do the rezoning. So she, through her comments here, just asked us when we do actually look at doing the zoning map changes that we look at making her property residential instead of commercial. But part of the reason why we're looking at these changes.
Any questions? Okay. No questions. Is there a motion?
I'd like to move option one up there.
Okay.
Look at that one.
Moved by Gass, seconded by Miller. Option number one. Discussion? Okay. Roll call.
Houser?
Yes.
Gass?
Yes.
Peggy?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Miller?
Motion passes. Thanks for your work on that. And thank you, Mr. Lemire, for being here. Okay, we're near the end here. Other business. Oh. Let's yeah, let's talk to her afterwards.
Long-range planning update, I don't have anything. Follow-up on items recommended to the Board of Supervisors and Board of Adjustments. It's been a while since you have met. What was in the minutes for your last meeting?
I think it was July.
You read the minutes. Yep, that was withdrawn. And so activity has been pretty slow in that regard.
Bella Woods.
Oh, and was Bella Woods the last meeting?
That was back in May, but we're doing the final plat in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, Bella Woods will be going to the Board of Supervisors for final approval October 15th. This does not come back to you. You only have a review of preliminary plats. You have a lot that will be coming your way, I have a feeling, however.
You don't have any member meeting?
We won't know that until tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Or
4:30. Well, there were a lot of people that were not in the commission.
Could be. I'm done. Last question.
Okay, let's move to commission comments then.
There were a lot of people here tonight with maybe some concern about the wind generators, but there were also some wind generators that nobody had any concern on. It might be nice to consider a class of conditional use permit where you have all the regulations down from past, but if they follow the regulations, then the only reason that it would come for a conditional use would be if there was a protest from a neighbor. So you could speed processes along without impacting neighbors. Still send out a note that there's going to be a meeting, but if nobody cares, then don't have the conditional use permit. It becomes a permitted use. It's only conditional with people
object
and bring it to
a
meeting.
But if you don't know that, so you get the
meeting. Well,
that's
no,
where everybody can
come. What you know is there's going to be a use. You send a notice out to the neighbors, and the neighbors, if any neighbor objects, it comes to a meeting. If nobody objects, then nobody cares.
Okay, so the letter would have to say, we need to hear you. Yep. You need to respond to this prior to the meeting.
It might just be in nice way to do some class of conditional use. The only reason I thought about it is I didn't think there would be anybody here tonight for.
I sure didn't either.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
And thank you for the 378.
Jeez, Leanne.
I'd like to go to email back if you wanted to print it.
Okay, let's go around the table. So, Stephen, you've had Nancy, anything?
Nope.
Nancy?
No.
Susan, welcome.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be here, and I feel like I've been broken in love.
Yeah. The first meeting I attended was almost an all-nighter.
And I have no comments. Announcement of the future meeting is November. I'm sorry?
Staff comments.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do want to just share with you that the time is now to hold a joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors. According to organizational policy, you should be doing that every year. But we're getting to the point where we're going to start looking at our work program for next calendar year. Budget meeting is going to be here upon us very shortly. The Board of Supervisors will be receiving the capital improvements plan for public input in the next few weeks. So I'll be working with the board to identify several dates and then work with Kristen to get dates that you all are available to. And hopefully we can hold in the evening concurrent with your regularly scheduled meeting so you don't have to have another night away from your family or the weather or nice fall evening or winter snow time. But just heads up that we'll be having that. We'll be scheduling that joint meeting.
You can add a grant person for a circuit breaker person. They've gone around and
for economic development, right?
To meet with the town, and that seems to be working out.
We'll be evaluating that. I have heard positive feedback from various communities. The Board of Supervisors, just a quick 101 on that. In May and June, the Story County Board of Supervisors solicited proposals from economic development firms to provide economic development services for communities under 2,000 persons, according to the 2010 census, and the unincorporated area. I might have that number wrong, the 2,000, but I think it is 2,000. So Ames, Huxley, Story City, Nevada, those larger communities are not part of that, the services. We had brought in several consultants that did interviews with the board and presentations. The board ultimately selected the contract with Ames Economic Development Commission. It's a one-year contract. The services are for only fiscal year 2013. Like I said, we're starting budget talks, and so the effectiveness of that program will soon be put on the plate for discussion. As the current board is, they have liaisons with each of the communities in Story County, so I think they're trying to communicate with communities, too, from the community standpoint, how effective is this is a service that Story County should commit to continuing. Should we narrow it? Should we broaden it? What exactly should we be doing? Which would be a benefit for them to receive your input as well as commission members and necessity for that joint meeting.
Yeah, as a commission, we haven't really seen anything one way or the other, but as individuals who live in our very community, we've been
seeing. Good evening.
Certainly know the mayor over at Collins, and I don't think either community has taken much of advantage of it at this time, but things move slowly in small towns. They only meet once a month, and so if the guy comes down, we talk one council meeting, and then two or three council meetings later, they get around to actually doing something. So if you're looking for a quick reaction from small business,
I just thought maybe you'd hear something from the local coffee
shop. It's still being discussed.
Future meeting?
Have we
haven't received anything yet.
We haven't received anything yet. We're getting
it. If it gets canceled, we let you know within a couple days.
We're getting
it. And that's like 4 o'clock tomorrow or something else.
I don't think we'll be ready.
I think it's through tomorrow. So anything postmarked tomorrow that would come in the following day in the mail would still go on it. Correct.
Oh, that reminds me. When do you get the minutes for this meeting type? Roughly. The next day? Would it be possible to get an email when the minutes are posted? It would make it, because I reviewed the minutes from 3 months ago, just this last week, and had a hard time remembering where I was 3 months ago. And I won't guarantee that I will do any better, but if I get an email when you put them out there, then I could hopefully read them while they're fresh, and if I have any concerns, it would be more timely.
I think what we would, Kristen and I can talk, I think would be more appropriate is we would email the minutes once they're finished through staff review to the commission members.
Sure.
Because we don't place them on the agenda until the agenda is posted.
If you get
because
them
we are drafting
send them to me an email, I promise I will read them.
And then, I mean, we won't expect you to reply unless you see some glaring errors or omissions and just know it's recorded. You'll still receive them. They'll still be posted as part of the packet, too. And that is for the public notification purposes, that they are available. Yeah, I think
know,
we could do that.
I know it'd make it easier for me. So, thank you.
Who wants to move to adjourn? Nancy moves to adjourn. Second?
Okay.
Nancy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
At 8:18 we are adjourned.